Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Gene and Roger here have a fantastic energy, but they're sort of all over the place.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 3, Two Gentlemen of CAPESA. And now, here are your two gentlemen hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Thank you, Dave. Hello, Tara.
Hi.
Hello, listeners. This Thursday, June 26th, our Patreon high rollers, that's at the $5 level and up, will get the June Again With Them a week early so that we can take off for the holiday. If we listen to any of these episodes as of this taping, no, but we will.
We definitely will, we promise. The very next day, on Friday, June 27th, everyone in the Patreon will get Again With This, episode 245, Let's Watch James Van Der Beek in Under a Rock with Tig Notaro. That is on YouTube. We'll link it in the show notes. It was a 12-episode talk show experiment from Funny or Die, where Tig Notaro interviewed people she did not know who they were, tried to figure it out, and it was amusing, I would say.
Yeah, you really haven't seen that much of James Van Der Beek's teeth since he saw Gretchen.
True.
In other scheduling news, on Monday, June 30th, the week of both of our national holidays, we'll be bringing two episodes out from the Patreon vault. Again with this 190, The First Daughter Where Monica Keena is the First Daughter, and 191, The First Daughter Where Katie Holmes is the First Daughter. We will not be taking the week off from the Patreon that Friday, July 4th. Happy birthday, America. It's going to be Let's Watch Michelle Williams in Dick. That is on Tubi. We will link that in the show notes.
We sure will. And then we will be back on our regular schedule the following Monday, July 7th, where we will celebrate Ringo Starr's birthday with Dawson's Creek Season 4, Episode 4, and then back to normal after that. All of this information and more, including about our new Patreon campaign, is at againwiththispodcast.com/club. Get into it. We'd love to see you.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of getting into it, let's get into this episode. Just the one plot. Pacey and Jen get marooned on the high seas, then get real. While back on land, Drew's old bitch of a mom does an ableism on Andy. New English teacher Mr. Kasdan is lecturing about, guess what, two gentlemen of Verona, when Drew, who's sitting behind Joey, starts playing with her hair. When flirting has no effect, he decides to see if negging her works, saying she doesn't seem very popular, so she's no use to him. And of course, since Joey is the one Drew's bullshit is forcing to turn around, she gets called out to tell the class what the play's about. Joey, as annoyed as we all are about yet another class assignment mirrors real life plot, sighs that the play is about a girl who comes between two guys, and Mr. Kasdan tries this. Clip two.
Two guys, a girl, and no pizza place.
Taco Taco.
Dad joke hero.
Yeah, you go to the visual aids to see a gif of that joke landing with a clunk.
Mm-hmm.
Now that his class has turned on his corny ass, Mr. Kasdan moves on to my most hated question when it comes to criticism, clip three.
How did the play make you feel, Miss Potter?
I didn't think it was very realistic. I mean, Valentine is this cardboard cutout hero, and Proteus is unfairly painted as a villain. I just think these scenarios are actually a lot more complicated.
Mr. Leary, do I sense an opposing viewpoint in your little chortle?
No. No, it's nothing.
Please, please, elaborate.
Well, I don't think it's a story about a girl coming between two guys. I think it's about the friendship between the two guys.
Which fails when the girl comes between them.
It fails because one friend betrays the other. I mean, Proteus is a lousy friend.
Valentine isn't such a great guy. I mean, he's so fixated on his honor that he totally loses sight of everything else around him.
He was willing to make the ultimate sacrifice. He gave up the girl he loved. You think that's a bad thing?
I think nothing about this topic is black and white, Dawson.
Also, the ultimate sacrifice is death, traditionally. Therefore, something that doesn't usually happen in a Shakespeare comedy. Not that anyone says that in the scene.
Absolutely nothing about this class discussion, starting with the topic, which Kasdan says is like one of the least successful Shakespeare comedies. Like, I don't remember it well enough to agree.
Yep.
I know that they didn't throw us in the high wheeze with that boring shit until like sophomore year of college, and also the assignment they end up getting, which Tara will get to in a second. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing about this is how senior English works. If you want to like let them fight about their personal lives, you do that freshman year when it doesn't count anyway.
Totally. Yeah, I took a all Shakespeare class in college and we did not even study this one. So they're really reaching. Anyway, Drew raises his hand to say Gene and Roger here are passionate, but he would like to see them focus their thoughts in a prepared debate. And Mr. Kasdan thinks that's a great idea. And Drew is grinning obnoxiously when Mr. Kasdan adds that he thinks Drew should join Dawson and Joey and put his own viewpoint into the mix. And also, this is happening tomorrow, so I guess I hope they've all read what we all agree is one of the least impressive plays in the canon. After the credits, Jen is an hour late for school. Grams says her angry femme music only exacerbates Jen's sadness, which, duh, that's what it's for. But Jen claims she's moved on from sad to pissed off. Grams announces that she's capping Jen's melancholy at 48 hours, which is, like, pretty generous, I have to say, for a teenager.
Yeah. On the one hand, it's Henry.
Uh-huh.
Shake it off. On the other hand, Grams drove her on this wild goose chase in the season finale, so let her grieve if she has to.
Sure. This is congruent with Gramps' character, though, because they already had a fight after Gramps died where she was like, you're already giving his clothes away. Gramps is like, well, he can't wear them. It was like the day after. Anyway.
Yeah, true.
She then tries to give Jen an umbrella despite the sunny weather because it is a red leather day in the Farmer's Almanac. And after class, Dawson is briskly trying to schedule debate prep. And again, not how this works. You don't work on a debate together if you're debating against each other. Like, of all of the contrivances, very weak.
Yeah.
Joey asks if he's okay with this, but Dawson would rather just get this over with than talk about how awkward it is. Joey has to work, so Dawson will have to squeeze prep in at the yacht club. Joey says it's dead on Thursdays, except for one geezer who always comes in for the prime rib special. Dawson manages a tiny smile before booking it because, as we see when the shot changes, Pacey is heading over with Jen. Pacey makes a rueful joke about how fast Dawson left. Joey points out that Pacey isn't any more eager to talk to him, and Jen agrees that one of them is going to have to break the stalemate. Pacey says it won't be him and it won't be today because he just got his first A.
Didn't he get some A's with Andy in season 2? I feel like the show is maybe forgetting already that they went out and Andy was sad about it until like the closing moments of last season. Right. So anyway, just wanted to make that note.
I think he may have just gotten B's and that was amazing, but I certainly did not go back to check. So you could be right.
Nor did I.
Joey's thrilled for Pacey, but when he wants to celebrate by taking her sailing this afternoon, she has to tell him why she can't join him on the absolute last beautiful day of the season. So Jen volunteers to go as long as Pacey knows she's not going to make out with him and she might puke. And then we're with Andy, frantically getting ready and seeking Jack's advice, clip 4.
Up like this, or down?
Don't ask me hair questions.
That was good line delivery.
It really was. I like how quick he was and like how instantly irritated. She decides down is more relaxed and exposits that she has a college interview today at the yacht club and further exposits that Jack has not started his college application process yet. Good grief, more exposition. Andy wants to go to Harvard, but Mrs. Valentine is an alumna at one of Andy's backup schools and Andy wants to make a good first impression. She swoons a bit and Jack rushes over to make sure she's okay. Further expositing in the process that Andy just started a new and extremely fictional drug card called Nardol, which works better than anything else she's tried. So,
oh, it's real.
It is. I Googled it and I couldn't find it.
I think Nardil is real.
Okay.
It's an MAOI. And it's one of those like if your depression is really they're having trouble like rooting it out with the first script, they add that one. Apparently, it's not the first one used to treat this, but it does actually track that Andy would be on this. I do think that we gigged this in the recap at the time, but maybe shouldn't have because Nardil does exist.
All right. Sorry. Thank you for the correction. Believe it or not, more exposition. It's a preventative. So I guess we're supposed to think it's in the Xanax category, or they say it is. And Andy tells us Dr. Newman recommended using it in times of stress. Jack shrugs that she could try his tactic, which is forget he's a senior. And then we get this clip 5.
Okay. How do I look?
Like you should be interviewing her.
Aw, I love that.
Yeah.
That was really sweet.
That could backfire in terms of it being like, you look mature, but she doesn't. She looks appropriate, actually.
She does. At the Leary house, Gail has given Mitch the flu. Dawson victim blames that if they could keep their tongues out of each other's throats, they wouldn't keep passing this back and forth, and they ignore him and snuggle up on the couch together. On his way out, Dawson says where he's going and why, and both parents freeze in shock. Clip 6.
Are you okay with that?
Why does everybody treat me like my head's going to spontaneously explode every time her name is mentioned?
Because they watched the last third of season 3 when you were a huge bitch to her.
And also the whole rest of the show.
Yes.
I will also note there is some very specific symptomology that not both of the Leary parents share, namely that Mitch is still stuffy and Gail is still nauseated. Definitely nothing. Moving on.
Yes. Gail does not mention season 3, but does actually say about Dawson wondering why everyone acts like his head's going to fly off. Clip 7.
Because it did.
Swish. I can't believe it actually got in the episode.
Me neither. MVP.
Dawson whines that 3 months have passed since then, which is like a decade for a teenager. And now he and Joey have separate lives. I feel like we haven't talked enough about his hair yet this season because he's really grown out the top. And I think it's better than when it was doing like the parentheses on his forehead.
Right. The bear claw.
It's long enough to tuck behind his ears barely, but it seems like it's also like kind of thin. So it just seems like it's matted down all the time because they're trying to just control it, but not look like they've put gel in it. It's an improvement, not a huge one.
Yeah, that's, I think, what I said when we first saw it. Like, it's vastly better without being good. And it's also like clearly that dude growing his hair out ends where occasionally when he's backlit, you can see that a couple of the hairs just sort of fry off into nothingness, or like 5 ends on a single hair. And they're trying to, I think, bring down the blonde of it. So there's like a ton of product in it. And it's just like, it's just in that non-savory liminal space. He has my sympathy for sure, because growing it out, especially for a boy, is not easy, and he doesn't have the most forgiving cranium for this, but yeah, it's bad, but it's so much better than angry bear claw that is featured in the crying Dawson meme. It's hard to explain that it's not good, but much better.
It is. It's just that it to me, it just looks like every scene, he looks like he just got back from the beach, but not in a cute way. Like, it just looks kind of dingy.
Yeah, dingy is a good word.
Anyway, clip 8.
I'm Pacey.
So you've joined Dad in the Great Pacey Watch 2000. Sorry, I don't have any updates. Oh, except for the fact that he seems to hate me even more since I let Joey know about his grade situation. Thanks for the tip, Pop.
Okay, well, I would not leave after this out of fear that my bedroom furniture would be moved onto the lawn by the time I got home, but Dawson's built different, I guess. Wow.
Yeah. Ugh. Although, I have trouble really getting it up to hate Dawson in this particular scenario because A, Mitch should have kept his yap shut.
He should.
About all of this for a number of reasons, mostly ethical. And second of all, you know, this keeps coming up and I think Dawson has a speech about it later in the episode, but like, guys, just stop. Just let them be mad.
Yeah.
Fighters to their corners. Like, this is what happens. It's not a big deal.
No.
But, you know, it's a show in which they're both in the credits. So I guess this is how it has to go.
Yep. Mitch tells Dawson he did the right thing, but Dawson's all out of right things on the Pacey beat. He does, at least, ask if they need anything before he leaves, and Mitch asks him to close the window since the wind is starting up, and I think it might stop soon since it could be from the flapping of Dawson's pants, as you can see on his way out.
That also has gotten better, but still is not good.
Yes.
Like, things are fitting closer, but they're still too long, and the pants are not in the neighborhood of the correct volume still.
Yeah. I mean, on the pants, you have to grade on more of a curve because, like, your hair is your personal choice more so than, like, this is just how pants were then. Like, they fit you in the waist, and then they were seven pants worth of pants from the waistband down.
There was no other pant available for another couple of years. It's true.
So then we're at sea with the True Love and Jean-Pierre Rampal, clip 9.
That was giving me David the Gnome, but I'll let Dave weigh in on that.
I just enjoyed, usually when we're recording these, Dave has his mic pushed away from him and is like on his phone doing whatever. And sometimes he will look up at a clip because he is so startled. And that was one such instance. This to me, and there's more of the classical score coming up or classical-esque. It strikes me as like, okay, we were given a budget for scoring and we have to use it or we won't get it next year. So just bust something out. I don't care what it is. We just need to spend this money. And yeah, we got that.
Also, we're short.
That too.
Here's some B-roll.
So Jen comments on how hard it must have been for Pacey to bring this boat back home. It's a whole other world out here. Pacey crabs that you could almost forget your girlfriend is spending the evening with her ex-soulmate. Jen loves Pacey and Joey, but she's probably not the best person to talk about making a teen relationship work right now. The boat tips way over on the starboard side with what Pacey says is a gift from the gods. And when Jen asks, he says, of course, he checked the weather this morning. The forecast said the storm was going to pass by them. And then there's more. Clip 10. Oh, the flute had a trumpet, friend.
As they sail into an office of the West Wing. Well, what's that?
It's really strange. Oh. Enough of that. At the yacht club, Joey and Dawson are studying when Drew gets a call on his flip phone from someone he calls gorgeous. And Joey and Dawson both roll their eyes in disgust because it's the fall of 2000. And having a cell phone is still a signifier of vulgar wealth. I would also note Joey shouldn't roll her eyes too hard since she's presumably getting paid to work right now and not on homework. Like, she's just in her uniform sitting at a table in the restaurant at the yacht club. Like, okay, nice work if you can get it, I guess.
Sure.
A little of the old Joey comes out as she grabs Drew's phone and tells Gorgeous that she's Drew's doctor and he will have to get back to her when his syphilis clears up. Drew and Joey briefly bicker about which of them is ruder before Drew calls out the tension, possibly sexual, between Joey and Dawson. Clip 11.
Must be the Star Wars thing.
Star Wars thing.
It's classic. You are obviously Luke to this Pacey guy's Han Solo. So you're the stuff of preteen daydreams. Cute, smart, non-threatening, which is great and all, but not for Princess Joey here, who is clearly smack dab in the middle of her bad boy phase.
In that Luke and Leia are brother and sister, I think he nailed it with this analogy.
Yeah, kind of. Not the most penetrating insight, but not bad for Drew.
Joey sneers that in this analogy, that would make Drew Jabba the Hutt. I feel like more like Admiral Ackbar with those eyes. But anyway, Drew wanders out and the geezer arrives, loudly clearing his throat at Joey. And she greets Mr. Brooks, who's played by Harve Presnell from Fargo, by name, and he asks for his usual table. Joey claims it's taken, joking with him. Mr. Brooks is not charmed by her, but she still smirks as she walks him over, guessing he'll have his usual. He will, and quick, so he can get his boat home before the storm. Joey gets concerned and goes to the bar where Drew is parked in front of a Pam Anderson vehicle. And clip 12.
Mr. Brooks said that there's a storm coming.
Mr. Brooks lives alone on the edge of town with a three-legged dog named Boo.
Okay.
What?
If we do not see this Boo, I walk. I demand it. It's required.
I do not believe that we see this Boo. I think that was a mangled reference to, what's it? Harper Lee?
Boo Radley?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe. Well,
it's hard to tell when they know what they're talking about and are trying to make a joke and it doesn't work, and when they just don't know what they're talking about.
So true.
I guess it could be both.
Joey asks Drew to tell her if he hears anything, but he is, of course, useless. When a crawl appears at the bottom of the screen with a storm warning, he has turned away, talking to Gorgeous again, and he misses it. And after the commercial, it's pissing rain as Mrs. Valentine walks Andrea into her office. Andy says Mrs. Valentine can call her Andy, and Mrs. Valentine is faintly snitty about her using a nickname. She asks what Andy wants to study, and Andy says everything at first. You can't overestimate the value of a well-rounded liberal arts education. Yes, you can, but anyway.
Sure you can.
To Mrs. Valentine's next question, Andy says her dream dinner date is Eleanor Roosevelt. Mrs. Valentine says most students say Jesus.
Not in New England, they don't.
No. Unless Andy's safety school is Liberty University. I don't feature that, but anyway.
Seriously. Converse College.
Mrs. Valentine runs down Andy's extracurriculars, which include the school newspaper. Wouldn't have minded if one or five Love Triangle episodes had touched on that literally at all. Much more interesting. When they get to the play that Andy directed, Andy tries to describe her approach, but Mrs. Valentine has already moved on to Andy's one red flag, her medical leave of absence at the end of her sophomore year. Andy brightly says she made up all her finals and it didn't affect her grades. Mrs. Valentine purrs that she hopes Andy's illness wasn't anything serious, and instead of just saying, it was at the time, but I was treated and I'm much better now, Andy bugs out her eyes for a second and then volunteers that it was emotional problems. And Mrs. Valentine practically wets her pants, clarifying that that means it was a mental illness. Dun, dun, dun. Have an answer ready. Just saying. This is obviously something
seriously.
Is going to touch on.
I mean, I put this on my one college application. This was when, like, you had to practice type the application on a photocopy, because I am from the middle of the 20th century.
Sure.
Barb was absolutely not about it. It was, like, in committee with my parents, and Dave Sr. was sort of, like, trying to stay out of it. But he's like, if she thinks she should do that, she should do that. And if they reject her for that, she shouldn't go there anyway. Mm-hmm. The writing on my application is what got me in. I don't think it was that part. But Barb was very, very against it. And it was super stigmatized. But that was like 10 years before this. And I remember watching this episode at the time and this subplot feeling like very protective of Andy, but also feeling like you have to be able to cover that.
Yeah.
Like, this is bad defense and it's unlike you.
Right.
To not be prepared and rehearsed on this as written, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. At least it is consistent with her character, because she didn't anticipate it coming up when she ran for public office or for student government either.
Right. True.
In the dining room, Joey's getting increasingly distracted from debate prep. Clip 13.
I just think that if Valentine and Proteus came to some mutual understanding...
God.
What?
Joey, we are trying so hard not to talk about Pacey. He's become the subtext of this whole damn play. What do you say we just get it out in the open once and for all?
Okay, let's.
Pacey and I are not going to be friends again. End of story. And everybody seems to think that it's time we made up, but that's not going to happen.
Well, since you did bring this up, why not?
What's done is done.
After 10 years of friendship, what's done is done?
No, after the greatest betrayal of my life, what's done is done.
Dawson, I was a part of that betrayal.
Yes, and you apologized for it. You at least showed some sort of remorse for what happened. Pacey could care less, which is fine.
Couldn't.
But she's not the kind of person I'm going to race out and be friends with again. And it's time for everyone to just accept that reality and move on with their lives, starting with you and me talking about this play without referencing him. Can I do that?
I mean, again, on the broad strokes, Team Dawson here.
Mm-hmm.
Just let it breathe. Boys do this differently than writers' rooms and girls do. Just stop. I understand it's a TV show, but enough. Nitpicking it on the sort of language level, get what out in the open?
Yeah.
How much more out in the open could any of this be? He's a meme. Like, okay, they didn't have memes then, but like, the entire town has to know about this because it's his show.
Yep.
I just found that very frustrating that it's like, we're just talking around this thing that we can't keep it stuffed down. Like, oh my God, like you dragged it out over the last quarter of last season. I am sure that everybody else who gets lines on the show is obligated to put this at the center of their lives. It's not so much getting it out in the open. It's not putting these people in scenes together when they absolutely wouldn't be IRL, but your show doesn't really allow for that.
Mm-hmm.
En conclusion, 10 years of friendship? Did one of them move to town in kindergarten?
Yeah.
Is it your whole life or not? Show Bible. Write one. Take it everywhere you go.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's just the 10 sounds less awkward than 12 or whatever it was if they all met in kindergarten, but still, like, figure it out. Joey, rattled by the storm, runs into the bar to flip to a news channel. Mr. Brooks rolls in after her asking for his check, kicking off 30 seconds of nattering between the two of them and Drew until Joey finds a weather report over which the anchor is saying they haven't seen a storm like this in 30 years. And then we're on the boat where Pacey is yelling that this weather came out of nowhere. And this is really where you'll see it in the visual aids. We start to see the limitations of the special effects budgeting for this because there's a lot of cutting to extremely cheap early CGI of like a boat on rolling waves and then up close, like in a big pool in someone's yard where like prop guys are underneath it, rocking it back and forth with their arms. Like it's just, you know, there's been an overreach here.
Yeah, it is quite budge. And they haven't seen a storm like this in season one is what they meant to say. So maybe they should have been a little better prepared. That also had a modest budget, but they didn't make the mistake of setting any scenes at sea.
No.
Overreach is an excellent way to put it.
Pacey and Jen yell at each other about whose fault it is that their radio's battery died. Jen is getting scared, but Pacey claims he's seen worse than this before. Let's get the weather report, find out where the worst of it is, and go around. And that's when a wave splashes into the galley and shorts out the radio they still have. And when we return to the club, Andy's saying tenacity is her greatest strength and her greatest weakness. Mrs. Valentine asks if Andy's illness isn't a weakness only, but Andy considers it a strength. It taught her the importance of being able to ask for help. Good answer. Cocking her head, Andy notes that they keep coming back to this topic, but no, it's not a problem for Andy to talk about it. Most teenagers go through something like Andy did, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. Clip 14.
It's just one part of my life. It does not define me as a person.
Well, although I'm sure you consider yourself recovered, perhaps someone with your background would do better in a less competitive environment.
Less competitive?
Perhaps a state school.
So you want to disregard all of my accomplishments and achievements because I had a problem in the past?
Andy, try and understand the position you've put me in. I've been given the task of judging your ability to handle the ardent pressures of one of the most difficult collegiate environments in the country. My name is on the line.
You know what? You're right. My background does have a bearing on my ability to handle pressure. I had a problem. I recognized that, sought treatment, and recovered. And the fact that I had the courage to face my problems and get help, I think only makes me better prepared to face the pressures of college than most of my peers.
I wish you all the best. And now if you'll excuse me.
This performance is dripping with bitch and I salute it, but Jesus, like, first of all, ardent pressures are not a thing. If you're implying that you also are interviewing on behalf of an Ivy League school, no. Second of all, excellent answer by Andy. Actually, it was the fire I was forged in. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
But yeah, there again, with the maybe be prepared, not just for a question about the gap in your high school CV, but with a comeback that's like, I passed the year in spite of this. I think it has made me stronger. And further questions along this line are really not appropriate because they aren't.
So Mrs. Valentine is mid-sneer when that thunderclap startles her. You can see that in the visual aids. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's very good.
In the bar, Joey, Mr. Brooks, and Drew are all watching the same weather report as the meteorologist says the winds may exceed hurricane force. Mr. Brooks worries that he's never going to get out of here now, just before King Bitch stomps through, evidently oblivious to the wrath of God outside. Clip 15.
Joey, I'm out of here. If you actually want to work later, let me know.
Look, Dawson, they're out there.
Who's out there?
Pacey and Jen are out on the boat.
All right, no wonder you've been so out of it. Why didn't you say something like an hour ago?
Well, wasn't this bad an hour ago?
I love the implication that if Joey had said, I am worried about Pacey for any reason, Dawson would have graciously excused her. Like, he wouldn't.
Yeah.
Jack bursts through the door looking for Andy and gasping that it's getting ugly out there. Not nearly as ugly as it was in there with Mrs. Valentine, Andy says. Enter a yacht club staffer named Bruce to tell Mrs. Valentine all the boats are secure, but three have radioed in for help getting into the harbor. Joey asks if one is the true love. Bruce says they don't have a slip registered in that name, and Joey babbles that Pacey just used whatever slip is vacant, but regardless, Bruce has not heard from the true love. Joey yelps that Pacey is definitely out there just before a huge tree branch crashes through a window and everyone ducks. And then after some more real rainy B-roll, the show overreaches some more with the CGI of the true love on the waves. Pacey says...
yeah. I started calling the boat the color form in my notes.
yeah.
it's not great.
Pacey says he thinks he's got the bilge pump working just before a wave slams him sideways. Jen yells that the boat is going to capsize. Pacey assures her that it won't. It'll come over. He calls the boat she, by the way, but I'm normal, so I will not. And because I'm normal, I also don't understand the boat instructions. Pacey starts jargoning at Jen. It's too dangerous for them to try to go back into shore, so instead they're going to shelter in a cove he knows that isn't far. When we see them out on the deck, the real footage of them in, as previously discussed, a large bathtub is not much more convincing, but I appreciate the effort. People were trying. They just, you know, failed.
Mm-hmm.
Jen asks what happens if things get worse. Pacey tells her they won't. She doesn't believe him, so he says if it gets worse, they'll send someone for them. And they go on. Clip 16.
We have no radio, and we're heading for a cove that you don't know the name of. Who the hell is going to find us there?
Dawson!
It's not a bad line. I don't appreciate them trying to set him up as the hero. Like, you need to give us more time to work up to the redemption of Leary. But
yeah, exactly. I agree.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Missing minerals? 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps restore what your body's missing, naturally supporting mood, energy, and immunity. Get yours now at traceminerals.com.
After commercials, Joey's telling Bruce that Pacey might not try to come in when the weather's like this. Dawson proves Pacey right by pointing to the cove in question on a map. Joey also correctly assumes that the radio is broken. Bruce can't send someone out just on their hunch. They are going to get in the boats they know are on their way, and if they still haven't heard from Pacey by then, they will send someone. After Bruce has left, Dawson has no doubt about where Pacey is and says they just have to go get him, and they'll need to borrow someone's boat. Joey thinks Mrs. Valentine has keys for all the boats, but Drew adds that it's why you should be nice to her little boy and holds up the keys to the Artful Dodger, warning Dawson not to let Mr. Brooks see him. And on the true love, Pacey's telling Jen he and Dawson rode out a storm in that cove. More jargon, more splashing. At the yacht club, Joey and Dawson are arguing about whether she can come with him until finally she screams that she can't worry about him and Pacey, and Dawson relents. Then in the bar, the power's out. No one knows what to do. Mrs. Valentine snits about the waitress cleaning up the broken glass. Drew strolls through nonchalantly. Clip 17.
You didn't know? She and Dawson went up to Pacey and Jen and Mr. Brooks' boat.
What? They stole my boat?
No, I'm sure they didn't steal it. They probably just borrowed it.
Semantics, like the difference between jail and prison.
Okay, Jack, look, I'm going to go to the marina office and try and get in contact with them. Board up the windows. If you can't find any boards, then just shove some tables up against them, okay?
Yeah, you got it.
You can't just move the table.
Now watch me.
Yeah, do you have any other suggestions on how to keep the storm out? No, I didn't think so. Okay, what's your right? 555-0154. 555-0130. That's Dawson Leary's parents, Jen Lindley's grandmother. Call them, reassure them. Can you do that?
Yes, okay. I can do that.
Mr. Brooks, I need you to come with me. I'm going to need your boat's frequency if I'm going to be able to get in contact with Dawson and Joey, okay? Okay, and you know what? Why don't you find a broom or a mop or something and sweep up the glass?
Wait, you want me to sweep? What do I look like to you, huh?
You know what you look like? A boy with nothing productive to do. Now find a broom.
Sergeant Andy activated.
Woo. Yeah. Cut this clip, make it a commercial for Nardal or Nardil, whichever it is, because that shit is working today.
Mm-hmm.
On the boat, Jen is losing it and asks Pacey to tell her something good. He says that if your hull has to have a hole in it, it's good that it's as high as theirs is. When he finally admits to her next question that he's been guessing all day about how this is going to go, she says they should make final confessions like in the movies. Pacey comments that those characters rarely survive after making confessions, so Jen suggests they just share regrets. He claims he has none. It's life's setbacks that make you who you are, so why regret them? But Jen has one. Clip 18.
I regret that I've never been in love.
Well, what about Henry?
That wasn't love. Couldn't have been. Yet my big regret is that we may drown before I ever know what love is.
Jen, you're not going to drown.
I don't need the comfort. Just don't get to say. Hey, see?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I do have one regret.
What?
I regret the way that things are between me and Dawson right now.
Have you ever thought about saying something?
What difference would it make to say something? It doesn't change any of our situations.
It might just feel good to say.
Mm-hmm.
He shouldn't regret anything that he did to Dawson. He's better off. But I will say, as ersatz as a lot of the storm is visually, she is very good. I believe that she's scared and trying to hold it together.
Absolutely.
Glad it's these two at sea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nice to get a reminder that they were friends. You know, they hardly got any time together in season three at all.
Yeah, true.
At the club, Andy is radioing with Joey and Dawson, the latter of whom is such an able seaman that when he gives their coordinates, Mr. Brooks says they're for Kalispell, Montana, which, like, let's not rule out the possibility Dawson could be that lost that fast.
Yeah.
As the score goes crazy with horror movie strings, they lose the connection. Dawson says they're almost there, and he's right. Joey spots the true love. The Artful Dodger pulls in beside and rocks the true love, and everyone springs into action, lashing the boats together and getting Jen onto the Artful Dodger. But when it's Pacey's turn, he refuses to leave his boat, and everyone yells at him until Dawson says he's not leaving Pacey and leaps onto the true love. Pacey tries to kick him off, but Dawson says people care more about Pacey than they do about this damn boat. And then Joey screams Pacey's name, and when he can barely make out her melting wax face in the rain, he decides to leap across with Dawson and then sits sadly in the Artful Dodger watching the true love sink. And after the commercial, there's some very goofy B-roll of the water settling with a flute tootling over it. The Artful Dodger makes it back to port, and some of the sodden teens are reunited with the parents and guardians who give a shit if they live or die, while Pacey and Joey and the McPhees only have each other. Mr. Brooks lurks around the edge of the crowd before buttonholing Dawson. Clip 19.
I know you'll forgive me for not expressing joy and relief at the sight of the gash. My boat's hull.
I'm very sorry about that, sir.
Sorry? You're sorry. Well, the gash is still there, and sorry isn't going to fix it. What else did you have in mind besides feckless regrets?
I have some money from the summer that I was saving for college.
Which is exactly what you will keep on doing. That boat is a thing, a replaceable thing. This young man risked his life to save my granddaughter, and the fact that you can't appreciate his courage explains to me why you've lived all alone all these years in that godforsaken house. And if I find out that you let him dip into his college fund, I will personally kick your shriveled old butt.
Amazing.
Yeah. Enjoy it, Mary Beth.
He does an incredible take at her ending on shriveled old butt that you can see in the visual aids. He's like, eyes bug out.
Yeah. He looks kind of turned on.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Gramps takes off and Dawson and Mr. Brooks are like, well, okay then, before Dawson returns the keys. Not as sheepishly as he should, in my opinion, but sure. And the McPhee kids are heading out. Mrs. Valentine catches up to say how impressed she was by the way Andy handled herself today. Jack corrects Mrs. Valentine. Andy handled the whole club and did Mrs. Valentine's job. Clip 20.
The university will be very interested in hearing my impressions of you.
I'm also pretty sure the university will be very interested in hearing what a bitch they have representing them.
Yeah, I'm terribly sorry, but please try to understand the position you've now put me in.
You wouldn't dare.
No, you know what? I wouldn't. Because at the end of the day, Mrs. Valentine, I'm nothing like you. I don't derive any pleasure in wielding whatever little power I have over others. So, you know what? Just give me the recommendation that you see fit, because if anyone at that university knows you half as well as I've gotten to know you, it's not going to count for much anyway.
Okay, the whole we have more class than you speech probably would have landed better if it hadn't started with Jack calling Mrs. Valentine a bitch to her face.
Yeah. Also, let's not forget Andy's power mad hall monitor phase and the fact that she cheated on the PSATs.
Yeah, good point.
Everybody's compromised. Sorry.
Very true. Outside, Joey is yelping at Pacey about how Madge is at him right now, but he can't focus on that. Clip 21.
The best memories of my life are on that sailboat. It represents everything that's good to me in this world, so you just gotta excuse me if I'm having a bit of a hard time letting all that go right now.
No, I won't excuse you. I don't think I've ever been so scared for someone in my whole life.
I'm sorry that I put you through that.
Just, can you do me a favor? You know, in the future, when you're dealing with life and death matters, remember that you're thinking for two.
We need more of this vibe between them, like, as goofy as it is that we're supposed to believe they never had sex on the boat, like, that would bond them. They would be more coupley than any couple we've seen on this show among the teens.
Mm-hmm.
So this rang true to me. After a hug, Joey gives Pacey a winsome look and says he knew Dawson would come for him. Pacey asks what would make her say that. She says it's because Pacey and Dawson know each other equally well and are best friends. Ex-best friends now, he says. Joey says that whether or not they hang out, Dawson is still a part of Pacey, and Pacey won't be whole as long as he pretends Dawson doesn't exist. He kisses her on the forehead and wraps his arm around her to walk her out of the marina. And, you know, I see your point. I feel like this would be an event that, like, would change where they are in their detente. But overall, I still agree with you. Like, leave it to heal on its own. Stop picking it.
Yeah, she's not wrong. Like, he should just go and be like, well, which he's about to. But yep. It's like, okay, just say you're sorry. And then everybody just let nature heal things that it's going to heal or not.
When Dawson's parents join him at the car, Dawson's watching Paisley and Joey together. Mitch comments that it doesn't seem fair. Dawson saved the day, but still didn't get the girl. Maybe he got something more important. This moment, which Dawson will always be able to look back on and know he did the right thing. Dawson smirks bitterly as he watches Pacey and Joey kiss by her truck and tells Mitch they should go. So he's facing away when Pacey looks back wistfully at Dawson. And on their way out, Jen tells Grams she always knew Grams had it in her to wreck a man like she just wrecked Mr. Brooks. She's got some angry femme music to play her when they get home. Grams gets flustered trying to find her keys in her bag until Jen stops her, and Grams gasps that she thought she'd never see Jen again. All night, she was thinking about what she would tell Jen's mother. Jen says she handled this much better than Jen's awful mother ever would have. She doesn't say that part, but, yep. You know.
Yeah, checks out.
Grams never lost herself like this before. When she needed her faith most, she had none. And Jen smiles and says it's because Graham lent it to her. Just sweet.
No.
Jen was terrified, but she still had hope, and she must have gotten it from someone. But no, Grams can't count on Jen for church on Sunday unless she wants to fall down, and their hug is the sweetest one. I don't care. I love them.
yeah, it finally got there. Like, mm-hmm. they are finally in an earned place so that these two performers can do what they should have been written to do seasons ago. So yep. I love it.
So Jen has gone inside to grab Grams's keys at the Yacht Club bar when she's suddenly face to face with Drew. Clip 22.
What are you doing here?
What are you doing here?
I live here. I have for the last 2 years.
So this is where the Lindleys banished their bad seed. It's good to see you, Jen.
Forgive me if I don't say the same thing.
Jennifer Lindley. Girl who set New York on fire. I thought moving here was going to be the most miserable mistake of my life.
I'm sorry, you live here now?
Might want to sound a little more upbeat when you say that. Guy could take offense.
Drew Valentine in Cape Side. God help us all.
History.
Oh, I can't wait to see how they reverse engineer this, whatever this is.
And finally, it's the next day. Dawson is cleaning up fallen branches in the yard when Pacey walks up. Clip 23.
Look, I want to come by and just...
But Pacey, you don't owe me anything.
Please, you and I both know that what you did yesterday was exactly what you would have done. Maybe, maybe not.
Trust me, we've done exactly the same thing.
Well, I certainly hope so. I just wanted to come by and say thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, hold on a second. That's not it. Something else I wanted to say to you. I know that things between you and I are pretty much beyond repair right now. And I wouldn't presume to be able to solve everything with a conversation, because that's just not the way it works. But I've been wanting to tell you that I'm sorry, Dawson. I'm really sorry for the way everything went down this spring. For my part in it, for the pain that it must have caused you. And I'm really sorry that I ruined our friendship, because I miss it badly. And however far off it may be, I do look forward to the day when you and I might be friends again. So until then,
till then.
Okay.
Yeah.
You shouldn't miss his friendship, but this was worth saying so the show can move on from the idea. Like,
yes,
Dawson can think and feel however he wants. Feelings are not wrong.
Yeah.
But Pacey got what Dawson wanted, and a conversation will not fix that. So, you know, unless they're going to couples therapy, which they aren't, because writers, they're not in their 30s. Silo them.
Mm-hmm.
You've been doing that to their characters for 2 years. Figure it out.
Yeah, I would have liked a more explicit, like, I'm sorry I lied to you, because in my opinion, that's the only thing he really has to be sorry about. And I don't think that's how Dawson sees it. I think Dawson sees it as, I'm sorry, he should be sorry that he trespassed on, like, Dawson's turf.
Yeah, like, I'm sorry you suck is Dawson's standpoint. Although he's actually not that repellent in this scene. And I would also say, like, yeah, he's sort of, I don't know, smug in the previous scene when he's talking to Mitch. But if only Mitch had just been like, now you get to be smug about this forever. Congrats.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that would be relatable.
It's
true. I would be smug about that forever.
Totally. And yeah, at least it ended on, like, we'll get back together when it happens or not. But until then, just know this is how I feel. And when you want to find me, you can. And I think that's the best way to leave it.
Yeah, and well acted by both. I didn't feel like slapping Dawson, so the redemption trail continues.
And that's it. Let's close up by naming our episode MVP.
Jack, because his first, I mean, honorable mention to Andy, of course, but Jack being like, don't ask me hair questions. And then when Mrs. Valentine grudgingly says to Andy that she did a fine job, and Jack immediately is like, she did your job. Just real bitchy.
Mm.
Yep. That's our boy.
I can't disagree, but I will honorably mention Gail for because it did.
Yeah. Yeah. She was in the conversation for sure.
Least valuable player. I mean, if we really do never see a three-legged dog named Boo, I'm going to say whichever writer put that in the script, because that's a big tease and I don't care for it.
I'm going to say everybody who works at the marina and the club.
Yeah.
It's hurricane season. You live in a coastal town. Be better prepared than this.
Fair.
Next time on Again With This, it's a Days of Future Past episode of sorts, as our, quote, heroes wig out about college, Joey gets drunk, Drew gets creative with his evil scheming, and Gretchen gets real with Dawson about why she's back in Capeside. What you should get is some Visine before you check out our visual aids. We do, and have done, key screenshots and GIFs for every episode of Again With This, and you can find them, along with those episodes, at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. I'm shriveled old butt Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is bad boy phase Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, must be the Star Wars thing. Talk to you next time. I hate Dawson so much. I hate him so much.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.